Hello again and welcome to In the Studio. I'm Redbeard with the stories behind history's greatest rock and roll album. Today in the studio, it's the anniversary of one of the most important debuts ever in rock and roll.
Can you still recall the time we cried? Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
If the doors of perception were cleansed, man would see things as they truly are, infinite. William Blake said that. Then Aldous Huxley wrote the book, The Doors of Perception, on that, based on that line. And we open the doors of perception in our own minds, and everyone can.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end. Before you slip into unconsciousness, I'd like to have another kiss, another flashing chance at bliss, another kiss, another kiss.
Yeah, the whole point of it was music and poetry. We were going to try to be like the Beatniks, who had jazz and poetry. Oh. We were going to make rock music and poetry.
Try to set the night on fire.
Hi, this is Ray Manzarek of The Doors, in the studio for the first Doors album.
January 1967, that first Doors album ranks at number 42 on Rolling Stone magazine's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time list. Only debuts from Led Zeppelin, The Band, and The Ramones rank higher. And no, I'm not forgetting Meet the Beatles. Rolling Stone's panel ranks The Doors first 17 slots higher. So you see, it's impossible to overstate the innovation and significance over a four-decade period that The Doors' debut provides. 1967 was truly the year the rock and roll album came of age, the year in which rock performers stopped thinking of their music strictly in terms of hit singles. 1967 was the year of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, the year of Jefferson Airplane's Surrealistic Pillow. But before either of those, 1967 was the year of The Doors. Their first album, released in January of 1967, was a haunting and provocative collection of songs whose lyrics and sound went far beyond the musical mainstream. Robbie Krieger's guitar playing was spare and jazzy. Ray Manzarek's organ wove elaborate patterns around the beat of John Densmore's drums, and the powerful musical result was, at times, hypnotic. But the focal point of it all was the singer. Jim Morrison was only 22 years old when he recorded that first album, but there was no mistaking the sensuality in his voice, the intensity, and the pain. Even then, Jim Morrison had the voice of a tortured soul. The members of The Doors met in Southern California in 1965. Morrison and Manzarek were both students at the UCLA Film School. The place where the film students liked to hang out in those days was Venice Beach. Ray Manzarek remembers.
1966 put it right in between the hippies and the beatniks. Hippies were just getting started in 66. There were random, scattered little groups of freaks, as they were called at the time. They had long hair. They let their beards grow, and they let their hair grow, and they started to wear soft garments rather than tight, binding clothes. And you'd see them occasionally, and it would be like you'd flash the peace sign to each other is what you would do, you know, the V for victory. Yeah, nonverbal communication. Yeah, everybody knew that there's other psychedelics just like us. 2 years later, there were thousands and thousands of hippies everywhere, all across America. Everyone practically was a hippie. In 65, 66, the beatniks were long since over with. The beatniks had lived in Venice the late 50s into maybe 60, 61. They were all gone by 1961. So mainly, when we were down there, it was film school people. old retired people, various bums and winos who are still down there today, you know, that has never changed. And it was a wonderful sort of quiet place in which you could stand. And here's what we did. We stood on the edge of the continent. It was the edge, the end of Western civilization. You could go no further. We stood facing the setting sun in the Pacific Ocean, and we looked out and realized that across that ocean was China, Japan, the Orient. Buddha was across that ocean. And we stood there and watched that sunset, and it put you in the perspective of this is a planet, this is a globe that we're living on, and we've come as far as we can come with Western civilization. Man, there's got to be some other way of living on this planet. And that realization came to an entire generation of young people, and it became the motto of the generation was make love, not war.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there. But can't you still recall the time we cried? Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
Break On Through, the first single from The Doors, which for all these years has had the word hi edited out four times, because in 1967 the record company was afraid radio stations would ban the single for having drug references. It's now been restored on the Perception Box set version of The Doors' debut album. Here's keyboard player and founder Ray Manzarek.
Break On Through to the Other Side is about exactly opening the doors of perception, opening your mind up to break on through. Some people have said, well, that's about death. It's not about death. It's about expansion of consciousness. Break on through out of, break your chains is what that means. Break out of your mundane existence and break on through to the other side. The other side is freedom. Break on through to freedom.
Ray Manzarek was a classically trained musician who had grown up in Chicago before attending UCLA, where he found a kindred spirit in Jim Morrison. They both had an interest in philosophy, in avant-garde film, in the idea of art as confrontation. Morrison was the son of a Navy admiral, a brilliant student with a well-deserved reputation as a provocateur, the kind of guy who did outrageous things simply to see how others would react.
We graduate from UCLA, and Jim was going to New York, and I was going to stay in Los Angeles. I'd just gotten there from Chicago a couple of years before, and he'd come up from Florida, and he said, well, I'm going to go to New York and make my fortune and
make avant-garde films in New York. And I said, well, I'm going to stay here. And about 2 months after that, it was right around graduation time, middle of summer.
What year are we talking about?
July 1965.
Wow.
July 1965. I'm on the beach, graduated. Didn't know what I was going to do with myself.
Oh, on the beach, kind of says it all, right?
Right. I've been in school all my life. School's over with. Now, God, now what do I do with myself? And who comes walking down the beach but James Douglas Morrison? Totally transformed, too. He had gone from 165 pounds down to about 135 pounds.
Wow.
He was about 5'11", 6 feet tall, and he was kind of soft at UCLA. He wasn't fat. He was just kind of soft. Then I see this guy walking who was just like lean and hard as a brick. His hair had grown, and it's Jim looking absolutely transformed.
The young Adonis.
Adonis, exactly. Yeah. Like David, like Michelangelo's David. His jawbones had come out. He'd lost all that puffiness, and he looked incredible. It was like, hey, Jim, I thought you were going to New York. He said, no, I decided to stay here. I said, what have you been doing? He said, I've been writing some poetry. Writing some songs. And I said, songs? All right. Because he knew I was a musician.
Yeah, but he hadn't worked in that format before.
No, right? No. He never had. He had piano lessons a little bit when he was a kid. But he was just sort of singing songs to himself. And I said, well, hey, sit down here, man. Sing me a song. And he did Moonlight Drive. And when I heard those lyrics, man, this is the first one. He just sat down and he started to sing and, sing the words. And let's swim to the moon, let's climb through the tide, penetrate the evening that the city sleeps to hide. Let's swim out to night, love. And I'm going, whoa, I got chills, man. It's the middle of summer, blazing hot, and I got chills, And I thought, God, that sounds really good. Do you have any more? And he had like three or four more that he'd written. And those are the best lyrics I'd ever heard for rock and roll. That's incredible. I said, let's get a rock and roll band together. He said, that's exactly what I want to do. And I said to him, what are we going to call the band? And he said, let's call it The Doors.
Oh, he had it right off the top?
He had it, man. He saw the whole vision. He saw everything up on that rooftop where he was staying in Venice, like 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness. He was on that rooftop and writing his songs and thinking about a rock and roll band. And I said, The Doors? That's ridiculous. Wait a minute. You mean like the doors in your mind? He said, yeah, exactly. And I said, whoa, heavy, man, opening the doors in your head. Because at first I thought it was like a ridiculous door. Call a rock and roll band The Floor,
Right.
The Doors. A door?
What does it mean?
Well, yeah. And then I realized opening the doors in your head and getting outside of yourself. So then a little later I was in the Maharishi's meditation class. And in that class were John and Robbie. Somebody pointed John out and said, that guy's a drummer. And I went up to John and said, listen, we're starting a rock and roll band. I'm a keyboard player, and I got a singer, and we need a drummer. And he said, well, I'd be interested in hearing what you got. And then he points to Robbie and says, that guy's a guitar player. I said, well, hey, why don't we get together, man? So we did. Everybody in the Doors had ingested before we got started, and while we were in our early formative years, we had all ingested certain psychedelic substances, to wit, LSD. And taking LSD opened the doors of perception. We saw the infinite. If the doors of perception were cleansed, man would see things as they truly are, infinite. William Blake said that. Then Aldous Huxley wrote the book, The Doors of Perception, based on that line. And we open the doors of perception in our own minds, and everyone can. It's nothing, that is available to all human beings. That's the spiritual quest that we're all on, to harmonize ourselves with the universe. We were trying to get high without taking the chemical, because the chemical had also will plunge you. You'll see heaven, but you'll also see hell, and some very scary stuff inside of you that the doors of perception open up to the demons as well as the beauty of life. So you have to balance both of those, the beauty and the demons. So we tried to do it without opening the door to the demons. So all of that energy, all of that power, all of that wonder at the beauty of life, all of the dread, the fears, all put into the Doors' first album.
our goal at the time was to be the Beatles, the Stones. You know, we were going to be the American, basically the American Rolling Stones. I said, we can do that. The Stones are playing blues. When I first heard the Stones, I said, hey, they're real good, but they're playing Chicago blues. I grew up with Chicago blues. We can do that.
But for them, reinterpreting the blues was clearly not enough. With the Doors, the idea was always to go one step further.
The whole point of it was music and poetry. We were going to try to be like the Beatniks, who had jazz and poetry. Oh. We were going to make rock music and poetry, and in our music incorporate all the elements that we could do. I brought in a sort of a classical music and a jazz background. John Densmore was a jazz drummer, and Robbie Krieger was a folk blues, Robert Johnson, and flamenco guitar player. So he brought that element in, and we tried to put in Jim, of course, read. Was an incredible poet and read books like crazy, just a voluminous reader. He was amazing what he could devour. So we tried to put everything we had inside of us into the music, and you know, that's what you have to do in music. And it worked, man.
Willie Dixon's Backdoor Man, done by The Doors from their first. When we come back, you'll hear about one of The Doors' most famous performances at the legendary Whiskey A Go-Go Club. I'm Redbeard.
Hi, this is Ray Manzarek of The Doors, in the studio for the first Doors album.
Thanks, Ray. I'm Redbeard. This is the anniversary of The Doors' January 1967 debut album. By the spring of 66, the Doors had written a sizable collection of songs, so many, in fact, that Moonlight Drive, the song Jim had first sung for Ray on Venice Beach, didn't get recorded until the Doors' second album. They knew they were onto something special. The trouble was finding some place to prove it.
We couldn't get hired because we didn't play top 40. We were playing our own material until we finally got to a place called the London Fog on the Sunset Strip. And the London Fog was right down the street, about 5-6 doors down from the Whiskey A Go-Go. The Whiskey A Go-Go was the hottest place in the city, and we're playing at this pathetic little bar that sailors would come into, drunken businessmen would come into. It was just the worst possible crowd when there was a crowd. You know, 3/4 of the time there wasn't anybody in the place. There was the Doors, the bartender, and the go-go girl who was in a go-go cage. Rhonda Lane, it said, with the lovely Rhonda Lane, go-go girl, had a sign out front, the Doors. Yes, she did. Yes, with the band, right. It said, the Doors, band from Venice. And I was like, does that mean B-A-N-D or B-A-N-N-E-D? Are we banned? Banned in Venice, so you're on the strip. The Doors, banned from Venice, and Rhonda Lane, go-go dancer. And that's where we worked and worked. We worked 4 sets a night.
Well, the clock says it's time to close now. I guess I better go. Cars crawl past, all stuffed with eyes. Street lights share their hollow glow. Your brain seems bruised with numb surprise. Still one place to go. Still one place to go. Let me sleep all night in your soul kitchen. Welcome. Sleep on. Says it's time to close now. I know I have to go now. I really wanna stay here all night. All
That's The Doors from their first album with Soul Kitchen. At first, lead singer Jim Morrison was so self-conscious that he would barely look at the audience, acting almost as if he was trying to hide behind the microphone. But that soon changed.
We perfected ourselves at the London Fog, and the night we were fired from the London Fog, the girl from the Whiskey A Go-Go, who was the booker, came down and said, boy, you guys are terrific. She immediately fell in love with Jim. Just looked at him and said, gong, 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 that's the guy for me. I love this guy. And she said, you guys are just terrific. Would you like to work at the Whiskey A Go-Go? And we thought, oh my God, we're in heaven. We've hit it. We've hit it. It's the whiskey. Because we'd sneak down the street and stand in the doorway on our breaks. We worked at the Fog for about 3 months, and we'd look into the whiskey thinking, God, if only we could play here. The last night at the London Fog, the owner, Jesse, the guy's name was Jesse James. Jesse says to us, perfect, isn't it? The bandit. Jesse said to us, well, guys, you know, we're not getting a lot of people in here. This is going to be your last weekend. It was like, you know, maybe a Thursday or Friday night. And he said, you got tonight and tomorrow night, and that's going to be it. And we thought, oh, man, what a bummer. That was at the beginning of the evening. And after the second set, in walks Ronnie Heron. And God bless her, Ronnie said, how would you guys like to work at the Whiskey A Go-Go? Now, Morrison was so cool. Morrison said, you know, I'm going, yeah! Morrison says, well, come back tomorrow. We're going to have to think about it. I couldn't believe it. He just looked at her. She looked at him, and he said, I'm going to play this chick for all it's worth. And he said, I don't know. Maybe. We'll give you an answer tomorrow. She said, okay, I'll be back tomorrow. And she leaves, and then we all grabbed him and started strangling him. What are you doing? He said, no, 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 you got to be cool, man. You don't want to jump into anything too quickly. You know, let him. Of course we're going to take the gig. But I didn't want to look over anxious to her. I said, well, James Dean, Marlon Brando himself, man, he was just playing the role to the hilt. He was so good. I love that guy.
That summer, the Doors became the house band at the Whiskey A Go-Go, opening for bands like The Rascals and Buffalo Springfield. It didn't take long for Jim Morrison's reputation to spread.
The Memorial Day weekend is probably when we started playing there, and we played there through the summer. So it was the summer of 66, an absolute magnificent summer because the freaks were all coming. They were coming from everywhere, and the whiskey was Freak Central, and that's where everyone congregated on the Sunset Strip. You could go to the Strip and just see long hairs everywhere. It was really great. The feeling on the street was just amazing. So we're playing in this atmosphere and just playing our asses off, man, just getting better and better and stronger and stronger. And all the girls are starting to fall in love with Morris, and the word went out, you got to see this guy. He's hot. Phone calls were made everywhere. So finally, some record people started coming by, and Ronnie Heron brought Jack Holtzman from Elektra Records, finally came down to see us. And Jack Holtzman fell in love with the band, and he brought his wife down, and his wife fell in love with the band. And we did the thing that really got us the contract, because Elektra was a very intellectual label. They had been folk music and poetry and whatnot. And then they signed Love from Los Angeles, and they signed the Paul Butterfield Blues Band. So they were entering into rock and roll, and Jack was looking for another rock and roll band. And when we did the Alabama song, the Whiskey Bar, Kurt Weill, Bertolt Brecht song, a 1928 German song, I think that's what sold us to him. Jack said, well, not only do they look good and are cute and all of that business and are rock and roll, but these guys are actually smart. Just worked and worked and worked and started perfecting the songs and expanding the songs, too. What was great is that, for instance, The End was a short song. It was a short love song with an Indian motif, of course. And it was, as Jim referred to it, a song of goodbye, a guy saying goodbye to his girl. This is the end, beautiful friend. I'll never see your face again, the end. You know, it was about saying goodbye to his girlfriend. So we played the song, and the song was over. The body of the song was over in 2 minutes, and there we are in the club. Well, let's just keep playing, man. Let's just keep the same beat going, and let's start doing some stuff. And I would play the bass with my left hand, and I had a little Indian flute that I would blow into the microphone, and I'd play little solos on a little Indian flute that happened to be in the same key in D minor. We just started fooling around and fooling around with it, and then Jim started adding poetry to it. He started adding the lost in a Roman wilderness of pain, and all the children are insane, waiting for the summer rain. The blue bus is calling us. He would just start dropping things in and playing with things. Some things never got used, some things did, some things evolved. And it just expanded and expanded and expanded until it became the 11.5-minute epic that it finally did become.
The Doors signed with Elektra Records on a Wednesday. 2 days later, they gave a performance at the Whiskey A Go-Go that has since become legendary.
Jim had missed the first set. It's Friday night. He misses the first set. It was okay. So we did some blues. Sean and Robbie and I did blues and some jazz and stuff. And the club wasn't too filled up. But at the end of the set, the owner of the club, one of the owners, a guy named Phil Tanzini, came up to us and said, "You better get Morris in here. This is Friday night. I hired four guys. You're going to have four guys on that stage or you guys are in big trouble." So John and I think, oh, my God, we got to go get him. He's probably over at the motel. He was living at the Tropicana Motel at the time. And we went to his room, knocked on the door, and thought, do we hear anything in there? Knocked again, "Hey, Jim, Jim." And I heard a little scurrying around, a little, "Jim, Jim, it's John and Ray. Come on, man. First set, the other band's on. We got, it's Friday night. Come on, man. We know you're in there." And the door opens finally. And there's Morrison blitzed on acid. Just blitzed, man. And he's in his shorts and his boots. I said, "Jim, come on, get dressed, man. We gotta go." Oh, God. I looked at John and thought, and John looked at me, and we sort of went, oh, no. We gotta play tonight. And then Jim opens the little nightstand drawer, and he says, "You guys want any acid?" And he opens this drawer, and it was like it was lit. It was like a movie scene. It was like purple light was coming out of there, and he had maybe 30 little vials of purple acid. I said, "Absolutely not. Are you kidding? We're going to go on stage." "How many have you taken?" He said, "Only three. Only three." "Well, come on, man. Let's get dressed." So Jim struggles, and finally he's trying to put his pants on over his boots. I had to pull his, I said, wait a minute. Pulled his boots off as he's sitting on the bed. Then he put his pants on. "Here, now put your boots on." And we finally, and he put his boots on.
"This is the end. Beautiful friend, this is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end, no safety or surprise, the end. I'll never look into your eyes again. Can you picture what will be so limitless and free? Just of some stranger's hand in a desperate land.
Big hot Friday night in August, and Jim says, "Let's do the end." And we all looked at each other. This is not the point to do the end. The place, the club is jumping, and it's a slow. He said, "No, I want to do the end. Now let's play it." So we start to play it, and it was so hypnotic that night that the entire club had started little by little to come to a stop. First, the dancers stopped dancing and started to just look at Jim. And then the waitresses even stopped serving drinks, and we're just about at the point where we're doing we're just vamping, waiting for Jim to come in with some poetry, not knowing necessarily exactly what he's going to do. And this is the first time he ever did it, and he said,
"Lost in a romance, wilderness of pain, and all the children are insane, waiting for the summer rain." Yeah.
ride the King's highway, baby. Weird scenes inside the gold mine. Ride the highway west, baby. Ride the snake, ride the snake to the lake, the ancient lake, baby. The snake is long, 7 miles. Ride the snake, he's old and his skin is cold. The West is the best. Is the best. Get here and we'll do the rest. The blue bus is calling us. The blue bus The killer awoke before dawn. He put his boots on. He took a face from the ancient gallery and he walked on down the hall. He went into the room where his sister lived and then he paid a visit to his brother, and then he walked on down the hall, and he came to a door, and he looked inside. Father, yes, son, I want to kill you. Mother, I want to.
And then he said the forbidden F word. Mother, I want to. And he screams it out. And as he screamed out the forbidden F word, John and Bob just smashed on everything we had and just blasted the place with power. And it's like it shook the place out of its trance. And everyone just starts dancing and freaking and going crazy. And we played the song for like another 5, 10 minutes. Even the song just really stretched out, ended the song, and left the stage.
Come on, baby, take a chance with us. Come on, baby, take a chance with us. Come on, baby, take a chance with us and meet me at the back of the blue bus. Do not blue rock on the blue bus. Do not.
Thank you. Yeah, all right.
The owner, then that guy, Phil, comes running backstage and said, "You guys are the foulest, Morrison, you're the filthiest, foulest person. You can't be saying that kind of stuff about your mother. You can't say that about your mother on stage in public. You can't kill your father and say you want to." And he couldn't even say it to your mother. "You're fired. You guys are fired. Don't ever come back here ever again. Just, you got one more set to play and you get the hell out of here and don't ever come back again. You want to come to the Whiskey, you pay to get into the Whiskey a Go Go."
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end. It hurts to set you free, but you'll never follow me. The end of laughter and soft lies. The end of nights we try to die. This is the end.
That's The Doors with The End, recorded at Sunset Sound on that first album in only 2 takes. The entire album was done in 10 days with a budget of $10,000. I'm Redbeard. Coming up next, the song that would be their biggest hit.
Hi, this is Ray Manzarek of The Doors in the studio for the first Doors album.
Thanks, Ray. I'm Redbeard, and this is the anniversary of The Doors' first album. The Doors began recording their first album in early September 1966 at Sunset Sound Studios in Los Angeles. The producer assigned by Elektra Records was named Paul Rothchild. He would work with The Doors on all but their final album. Ray Manzarek remembers arranging the song that would be the key to opening doors for the band for years to come.
We had this beach house, and Robbie came by and said, "I've got a new song, and it's called Light My Fire." Huh, that's interesting. And then Robbie starts to play the song, and it had a folk rock kind of feel to it. And Densmore said, you know, and I said, "Hey, those are great chord changes, A minor to F sharp minor. That's great. Ooh." And then the little chorus part, "Come on, baby, light my fire." "That's great, great chords." And Densmore said, "I don't like the beat, man. Let's see if we can give it some kind of a Latin feel or something." So John starts to put in the tinka, kinka, kuka, kaka, all that little stuff that he was doing. Then when it hits, "Come on, baby," then we went into the hard rock, obviously. And then I said, "Gee, we got to do something." We did our two verses, two choruses, and there we are. The song could be over, one more chorus, and said, "Wait a minute, this is a great place. Let's do some solos in here. Let's start to stretch this out. Let's solo." So I said to John, let's do like Elvin Jones and John Coltrane, My Favorite Things. So I soloed, and then Robbie soloed, and then we came back to the song, and then two more choruses and out. At the beginning of the song, we had no introduction. I thought, "Now, how do we start this song off?" I said, "Wait a minute, let me think about something." Everybody leave the room. Everybody walked out the door, went onto the beach, and I sat in this large room by myself, glass looking out at the beach, thinking, "Wait a minute, let me play that. Da 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 da." G da 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 da. That's good. Da 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 da. Now where can I go? Oh, I got it. I said, "Okay, you guys, come on back in. Now listen, here's how the introduction goes. John, I'll count it off. Give me a whack. 1, 2, 3. Bow."
You know that it would be untrue
You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. We'll be right back.
time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre.
Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. Say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on 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 fire.
As Light My Fire burned across the summer of 1967, The Doors quickly became America's most popular rock and roll band, popularity that would stay with them even decades after Jim Morrison's death. In 1967, there were already hints of the demons that would destroy him, ample evidence of his need to rebel. Maybe it was just the anguish of his poet's soul. Maybe it was the burden of being an admiral's son.
Because the military upbringing was so strict and so severe, he did say at one point, he rarely talked about his mother and father, never really said anything bad about them, other than the fact that he said they're dead. When it came time for our first bio, I was shocked when he said that. I said, Jim, your mom and dad are not going to like this. Because basically he didn't want to talk about them. Probably didn't want to even embarrass his father, didn't just leave them out of it. They have nothing to do with me. They created me, and that's over with. But he did say that in his upbringing, he had to call his father sir and his mother ma'am. It wasn't mommy or daddy. Might have been up to a certain point, but from then on, it was sir and ma'am. So it was a very strict upbringing. But because of that strictness, he was also very intelligent, very literary, very disciplined in his reading and in his writing, and then just absolutely exploded out of that in reaction to all of that. Then he went over the line, man. That's what happened to the poor guy. You know, it's the poet, he was just too sensitive of a poet to be in that, to maintain control in that rock and roll framework, and it just did him in ultimately.
Before you slip into unconsciousness, I'd like to have another kiss, another flashing chance at bliss, another kiss, another kiss. The days are bright and filled with pain. Enclose me in your gentle rain. The time you ran was too insane. I'd rather fly.
chill is being filled. A thousand girls, a thousand thrills, a million waves to spend your time. When we get back, I'll drop the line.
Sailing off on the crystal ship from the Doors' first album, I'm Redbeard.